Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast at Purdue University. This is Jessica, your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Ken. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing great, Jessica. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Hey, good. You know, we just had Halloween. How was your first Indiana Halloween?
It was good. It was pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Any special costume? Did you do the costume thing?
Actually, I was a backup dancer.
Nice. Nice.
But, what about you, Ken?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not much into costumes. You know, that's not really my thing. I like to just dole out candy.
Oh, really? Because yeah. I heard a rumor about a gorilla running through the hallways of the Cranard building.
I was not able to see that. So, sorry, I missed that.
Anyway, today we're here with Jim Flock, who's a graduate student in our program and has a lot of international experience on the field, and he's going to talk about some of his programs today.
Sure. I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, so Jim, it's usually we're talking to faculty members on these podcasts, but it's great to have a student. Maybe you can give us just a little bit of your background from before you got to Purdue.
Okay. So before I got to Purdue, I did Peace Corps about 10 years ago, and then from there kind of worked its way where I was working with local farmers and an organization called ACDI Boca. And so I was helping farmers aggregate their maize and take them to large-scale markets for better pricing and teach them how to do farming as a business or apply some cost principles to smallholder farmers that generally did subsistence farming, so trying to do that transition from subsistence to small-scale commercial. And so then from there, ACDI Boca was nice enough to have me in D.C., where I got to travel around a bit. I ran a program in South Sudan, where I lived pretty much along the border states and in Juba for 2 years, and then also had some projects in Afghanistan and Sierra Leone and traveled to Mozambique and a few other countries. So
you don't travel much?
Not since I've been in grad school. It's been just a couple trips here and there.
And you really go to these very desirable locations.
Yeah, somehow I morphed into a post-conflict specialist.
Maybe that's the tie-in with Halloween, right? All these frightening places that James goes to. Yes.
It's fun. So I got to travel a bit, and then actually with that, one of my trips was to Ghana, where I came across Hicks bags, and at the time I was also looking at agricultural economics programs. I hadn't worked with PICS in the past, at least in East Africa. I think it was still kind of being marketed up. But when I saw that in Ghana, it actually increased my interest to attend school here and to work on this.
Can you explain what you're talking about in a little bit more?
Yeah. Yeah, that would help. take for granted that you're at the university. So PICS is called Purdue Improved Cowpea Storage, and it's a triple bagging system where farmers oftentimes will lose grains due to infestation issues or to mold or to different kind of various insects and pests and diseases in the field. And so this was a huge issue in West Africa with cowpeas, which is the main staple crop.
With what?
Cowpeas.
What are cowpeas?
They're legumes. I don't.
Legumes?
Legumes.
Okay. Peas.
They're peas.
They're dried peas. They're okay. They're beans.
Yeah. Okay.
They're essentially beans. Sorry. And so there was massive infestation issues there, and so the Purdue Agronomy Department, along with the International Department, they developed this bag back in 1982-ish, 83-ish, and it really went a long way to mitigating the infestation issues. And so the cowpeas, or the beans, whatever you would like to call them, they were having losses of up to 40% of their post-harvest, and so that brought it down, I think, to about 5 to 10%, if I'm not mistaken. And so with that, they've continued to kind of expand that to see how it could work with other cereal crops or dried fruits. That's kind of the things that they're working on now, to see how it can better be marketed to emerging economies and developing nations, specifically with where a majority of the population is smallholder farmer agriculture activities.
Yeah, I think if you think about households, too, and the value of being able to store a crop rather than have to sell it at harvest, it means that they're able to be a bit more food secure, isn't it, James?
Yes. So that's the other thing with a lot of these is I worked a lot with maize in Kenya and also in South Sudan, but you see these farmers take on massive investments, and then by harvest, there's such a surplus coming into the market because everyone's bringing it at the same time that there's not a lot of good storage capacity. So things like PICS, they can store that for longer periods of time because eliminate some of the issues with the infestation and with some of the mold the farmers are practicing. So during the dry season, prices can increase upwards of 20 to 30%, and we know the quality has remained consistent throughout that. So that's one of the benefits. And actually, one of the other ones that I started seeing for my research in Nepal is that in Nepal, they have a less developed seed market. So they were using, Pix is also considered hermetic storage, so it's non-pesticide or there's no chemical additives to the quality of the grains. And so the farmers are actually storing their seed, which they do on farm, and then will replant for the next year. And they were using, they started to use Pix, which has only been in there recently, but they started doing this and they're seeing higher germination rates with their improved seed. And so that's another thing that I found interesting, because that was unique. In Africa, it's always kind of been about the food security. And this was, they still did some for the food security, but we also saw in, when I was traveling, some of the less developed districts, even within Nepal, they were primarily using it for maize seed and for wheat and different legumes, but this one specifically was lentil or green pea and things like that. So multi has a lot of different purposes to it.
I would imagine one of the challenges of doing this is that you need to find solutions that can be applied in areas that don't have the same infrastructure levels that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
What have been some of the biggest challenges that you've faced trying to implement this program?
So I think to backtrack, Nepal, Pix recently went out there and they identified a manufacturer called Naf Seeds, who's done a great job of launching it. If you go out there, they have these printed kind of sheets that go in Nepali and in the U.S. In addition, they have a pretty good linkage of agribet dealers, but one of the issues is definitely logistics and then also the cost of transport getting out there and then farmers understanding it. And what we saw is even with Pix and also with other kind of similar type of products, farmers didn't know what they had. So a lot of times, even in the survey and talking to them, they'd say, hey, yes, we have this bag, but like the government just gave it to us or an NGO just gave it to us. And there was no training. And that was even a little bit even more daunting than also as they were handling chemicals and pesticides, some of which here you would need a certification license for. And they're just saying, well, the agribet dealer told me to do this. So I think the training of it comes into play. And then also, as we saw in the least developed regions in Nepal, so this was in the far west and in the hills, which is kind of, it's some of the least developed regions within the country, the cost of it also went up too. So you have farmers making maybe $2 a day or less, and then the cost of the bags can range anywhere from $2 to $3. And the further you got into the least developed areas, the higher the cost tended to go. But there's been a lot of subsidies and a lot of ways to try and market the product. So I think they do need a better understanding of doing that. And one of the things we've seen and like we were explaining to farmers as we kind of walked through it is Pix, you have to have 50 kgs and you have to kind of cut it off there. But when farmers see a very sturdy bag, they want to store as much grain as humanly possible in there. And that would negate actually some of the benefits of hermetic storage or the sealness that cuts off the oxygen and increases the carbon dioxide, which kills all the insects and infestation into it. So that's one of the things is to get better education out. I mean, specifically for Pix, obviously, but I think just in terms of post-harvest losses, there's also a U.S. aid program out there that I was working with closely called CASAN. And even they recently had a post-harvest specialist come through and identify some of these issues and kind of bring some of it to the forefront. And I also worked closely with the National Maize and Research Center, Maize and Wheat Research Center, and they were instrumental too in kind of saying there's not a lot of information out there right now. So to get that to the farmers and to help them explain that is probably the biggest thing. And then I think you'll kind of see a knock-on effect of adopting some better practices with the farmers out there.
So James, these bags are reusable, right? I mean, you talked about a couple dollars a bag, but this is not a one-time disposal bag, right?
Yes. So the bags, from what I can tell, generally have a 3 to 5 year lifespan. The International Ag Program has a few more stories of they've seen a patchwork together and they've been going for 5 to 6 years. Nepal, the licensing agreement came in February of 2014. They've managed to manufacture and distribute 5,000 bags within that time, which is pretty good. So there is a long-term thing that also needs to be explained to farmers too, because I think you tell someone that makes $2 to $3 a day that you have to spend $3 or $2 on something, that's, you're asking for a very large investment to them when you look through the lens of their eye. So you do have to explain that this is a long-term benefit, and also to explain to them kind of the differences in the crops. And so, too, like they would say, you know, looking at kind of the survey and then the conversations we had in the field, they'd say, we're doing this for wheat. It's like, we can also do this for legumes, which have a much higher value add and sell for better on the market. And you can also do this for maize. You can do it for rice, too. Rice probably would be a little bit more difficult because of the large amount of quantities that they produce there. It's the biggest crop in the country.
So it's not just the technology, the goods, but it's also the training and the education is getting these people to understand that this type of investment will pay off for them. And
yes. And you kind of have to work through. And also you're dealing with large amounts of, you know, they're not the strongest in terms of math qualities or literature qualities. So maybe you do pictorials, or maybe you explain that, you know, this will last a while. And so in that, those take times because you're asking people that have done things for generations and how they practice and whatnot and how to improve in that. And you're asking them to change based on kind of you just showing up and say, hey, this is a great idea. That's happens time and again. And so I think working with the groups that, you know, working closely with USAID and CIMIC, whose staff has been there for a while, and rolling that out and making sure that the message is clear. And obviously you'll have those lead farmers and you'll have farmer field schools that you kind of link and connect with. And so we did note that a couple of the groups we saw with CIMIT and specifically with the USAID program, they had already done improved seed varieties and they had started using some fertilizer or inorganic fertilizer, and they had very good crop years. And so I think that built a little bit more trust too, where you might see better adoption practices moving forward.
So, go ahead, Ken.
Oh, who's making these bags, James? Where are they being manufactured?
It's being manufactured in NEF. It's being manufactured in Nepal by NEF Seeds, and then PIX will license them out as long as the manufacturers can meet the certifications. I also traveled to Afghanistan to do some kind of basic accounting principles with smallholder farmers, or production economics, if you will, just to get them to apply cost, but they are also doing it in Afghanistan. And then what they do is they find local manufacturers that can meet the quality specifications. The cost of the bags was, we actually had a couple conversations with the government of Nepal and with the manufacturer and with USAID, but very preliminary to see. The main thing is the plastic that comes in. It comes in from India, and I think it's 125% tax on that. And so that obviously drives up the cost of it. So we're trying to see if there's ways, since this is a good being passed on to smallholder farmers, if there's a way to circumvent that. And those conversations are still ongoing. So the bags are manufactured, the raw materials come in primarily from India, which borders Nepal. So it's same with Afghanistan. I can't remember where the plastics are coming from there. But even in the West Africa and East Africa, those tend to be made within those regions, and in Nairobi or perhaps Dar or whatnot. I think they're working on that. So they do it locally, it's sourced locally, it provides actually value add even to the local businesses there as well.
Jim, that's really great, and we really appreciate you coming to chat. Ken, did you have any last questions you wanted to add on?
Just wanted to ask Jim if agricultural economics at Purdue is living up to his expectations.
It has been. And I worked closely with Jess Lohenberg DeBoer, who is in the international ag team and is very much the marketing force behind PIX. And Kevin McNamara is my advisor as well. And I did comment to Jess afterwards that kind of during the dog days of being out in the field for 7 weeks and traveling, I came to Purdue to go work on PIX, and here I am traveling halfway across the world. And so I appreciated the opportunity that was given to me. So yes, it has. Some of those classes are a little bit rough.
Yeah, a little bit of math and statistics that can catch you off guard,
especially
right?
Especially after a 15-year layoff.
We're extremely happy to have you here as part of our team and our family in agricultural economics at Purdue, Jim. So,
Jim Flock, I'm a graduate student in agricultural economics at Purdue University. You've been listening to our podcast. To learn more about our department, visit our website at www.ageconpurdue.edu. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and our YouTube account.